Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit, nonpartisan forum open to the public. I'm Gloria Duffy, President and CEO of the club. To learn more about events or membership, join us online at commonwealthclub.org.
Well, hi, everybody, and welcome. Welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. Now, you can find the club on the internet at commonwealthclub.org. I'm Jan Wall. You know what I'm saying? Entertainment reporter for KCBS Radio, among other things. And I'll be moderating tonight's program. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce our very special guest, Patty Duke, author, former president of the Screen Actors Guild, acclaimed actress of stage and screen. Patty Duke's career has spanned 6 decades, and she's very young looking. I know, you're very young. She's conquered Broadway, film, television. That's a triple threat. She made her Broadway debut in The Miracle Worker as Helen Keller. At the end of that long run, she starred in the film alongside co-star Anne Bancroft. Both won Oscars, with Patty Duke also winning the Golden Globe. She played identical cousins on the very popular Patty Duke Show, also recording a top 10 hit song. She starred in the cult film favorite Valley of the Dolls and went on to win Emmys in TV movies, including a remake of The Miracle Worker, but this time as Helen's teacher, Annie Sullivan. Off screen, she was president of the Screen Actors Guild, author of 2 remarkable books, including one on her battle with bipolar disorder, back to Broadway with more productions, including The Glass Menagerie, Gypsy in Oklahoma. Right now, she's on stage at the Orpheum Theater in San Francisco in Wicked. Please welcome Patty Duke! Hello, darling.
Nothing if not graceful. Hi.
Oh, it's so good to have you here.
The sound man told me how to do this. Let's see if I can accomplish this.
Excellent. Ma, you must be in show business with that kind of experience.
Well,
huh?
I have been, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we will now begin the official interview, and I've got to start, honey.
Don't you threaten me.
I'm telling you, I am starting by saying, even for a child star, your story is so unusual and strange and bizarre. So, could you just...
The woman is absolutely right.
It is the wildest story I've ever heard, and the fact that you survived it completely blows my mind.
Well, that's a miracle. That's due to, I think, the kindness of the universe, mm-hmm. and the kindness of many, many people along the way. There was a great lack of kindness towards me as a child from the people who were running my career.
Well, let's explain it to everybody.
Okay.
What I'm referring to.
What a good idea.
Yeah.
You start at the beginning.
Yeah.
Okay. I grew up in New York City. We were very poor. My father was a tragic alcoholic. My sister, who's older than me, I love saying that. I love it better when she's in the room.
Right, of course.
And I can say it. And my older brother really took care of the family. And at one point, my brother was going to a boys club in the neighborhood, and he joined up with their acting group. And these people, named the Rosses, John and Ethel Ross, saw him in a play at that club, and they decided he could do professionally. He could do very well. So that was arranged with my mom, and my brother became an actor, and he actually acted on TV back in the ancient days of live television when we did plays on television. At any rate, those people were his managers, and a couple of years later, they decided that this was going really well with him, so they really needed a little girl in their stable. And so again, they came to my mother, who at that time in her life was almost always depressed, more than almost always insecure. These people told her that they could give me everything she could not. They could make me a star. I would make money. They would give her some. And my mother, at that time, I was literally attached to my mother at the hip. When she couldn't sleep at night, she'd get me up and get me dressed, and we'd ride the Lexington Avenue bus all night long until the sun came up. And somehow, instinctively, I knew how troubled she was, but I also knew I learned to know melancholy. At any rate, I tell you all of that because I hate when people just make a snap judgment about my mother. You know, what kind of mother gives her kid away? Well, I just told you what kind of mother. So I went to live with the Rosses when I was 7 years old. Right. I didn't understand why I pined for my mother, but she told me to do what these people said and to be a good girl, and I did. Eventually, I started to work, too. Mr. Ross, he was more in charge of the how-to-act portion of the business, and Mrs. Ross was the business side. She was also the disciplinarian. At any rate, Mr. Ross cultivated in me an understanding of what acting is about, and he was actually, as I look back on it from this long ago, I think he was very good at what he did. Ethel, on the other hand, was not terribly enlightened about how to raise a child. For instance, my parents named me when I was born Anna Marie Duke. One day when I was 7, Ethel Ross came into the room where I was studying a script and said, "Okay, Anna Marie's dead. You're Patty now." Do you know how much that cost me on the psychiatric couch? You know, she might have thought in her way that it was a clever way to deliver this information. She didn't know how to look far enough to see that that could terrorize a child. At any rate, time went by, and I did a lot of live television like my brother. And, oh boy, I was getting job after job. The Rosses told me that when I go into an audition, I had to sparkle. Now, a number of calls from the auditioners came back saying, "What is wrong with that child?" I was sparkling. I thought I was only sparkling if my eyes were rocketing in my head and all the lights were doing. Anyway, they
they eventually toned you down. And
yes, they cleared that up. And the big... Am I talking too much?
No, this is fascinating. Am I right? I mean, the story is very unusual. It's a very unusual story.
Okay, thank you. I'll trust that you'll stop me if you need to.
I will. Well, we'll move to the miracle worker.
And now
worker.
I'm having a senior moment.
Well, let's go to the miracle worker
yeah,
at some point.
Yeah, that's where I was going.
Okay.
So by the time I'm 12 years old, I have earned a good deal of money in live television commercials and all kinds of things like that. But I've never been in the theater. And one day, John Ross decides, not only am I going to be in the theater, I am going to play Helen Keller.
Had you heard of Helen Keller? Did you know who she was at that point?
Actually, I had. From school. Certainly didn't know the extent. At any rate, you know, all the jokes go that he rearranged the furniture and that kind of stuff while I was blindfolded. But eventually I played the part opposite my blessed Anne Bancroft. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you.
Wonderful.
We were a team. We were a team, and that feeling of teammates has lasted all our lives. You know, I'm still here, and I still got it.
Did she help you a lot with that characterization?
She would never impose. Arthur Penn directed the play of The Miracle Worker as well as the movie. And, of course, she respected him tremendously, so she would never impose herself. But she would do things with body language, with the amount of tension on my hand, things like that, that I have now realized is exactly what people who are blind experience. They know if you're angry, if you grab them like that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If you grab them like this, everything's fine. At any rate, mostly what she did was she allowed me to know that she loved me unconditionally. She had a fabulous sense of humor. I mean, she married Mel Brooks.
Yeah, hello.
And he loved her. I used to sit on his lap in her dressing room. Sure, little did I know.
Did he make you laugh?
He made me laugh. He made her laugh. Yeah. But she, in turn, made him laugh. Mm-hmm. And, of course, made me laugh all the time. Mm-hmm. I am so blessed to have had so many accidents of life put me in that position so that I can look back after 50 years and feel just as passionate and just as loved as I did then.
So the Rosses must have been very happy because here you won
Rosses
the Oscar.
Oh, the Rosses were delirious. Are you kidding? They were, except Ethel kept reminding me that I was not pretty, that I was plain, and if it wasn't for them, I would be nothing. Mm. And it was bizarre to, I mean, I wouldn't even dream to try and balance that at that age. Oh. But you know, I mean, hello, here's an Oscar. You're ugly. Sit down. Be quiet. Don't talk. Don't do this. Don't do that. Mm. Oh, and while you're there, have this drink.
What do you mean by that?
It started while we were filming The Miracle Worker. They had both become, in my opinion, alcoholics. Ethel was cross-addicted with prescription medications that a friend of hers who was a nurse sent her from Michigan.
Psychopharmaceuticals?
So it was a weekend off from the filming, and there was it was a gorgeous day in the summer, and they were drinking banana daiquiris. And they looked so good. So the suggestion was that I could have a virgin banana daiquiri. Not. So I was drinking right along with them for the next few years. Also, while filming The Miracle Worker, I've never quite put it in this context. Mm-hmm. The molestations started. I think that, dime psychologist that I am, I think that things were becoming so much beyond their wildest imaginings, and the fear that they would somehow lose someone else would get my ear and take me away from them. They used all kinds of devices to keep me under their shadow, one of them being the sexual abuse.
So the more successful you got, the more they needed to keep you down and keep you
Precisely.
Sick, get you sick and keep you sick.
And the sicker they got.
See what I mean? I mean, isn't it amazing she survived the way she did? I mean, this is pretty incredible.
I had a lot of help along the way, I promise you.
So,
They are now and have been passed for, I'd say, 25-ish, 30 years. I had to come to terms with the fact that I, for my own health, had to forgive them completely. That took time, mm-hmm. but I did it. And to even beg God for forgiveness for them. Mm-hmm. Because I believe that when they began with this child, they had the best of intentions. They just were not equipped.
Right. Forgiveness is the key.
It is.
It really
well,
is.
You know what it did? Once I was able to forgive them fully in my heart, I was able to forgive me.
Right.
Because people who are molested very often think it's my fault. Why would they have done this? No, it's my fault. I must have done something. At any rate, well, I also must credit the absolute right diagnosis for me, which I did not achieve until I was 35. That diagnosis was manic depression or bipolar or whatever we want to call it. That was the beginning of being able to really sort things out and put them in the proper places. I had a terrific psychiatrist, but he was my psychiatrist for a couple of years, and he never knew I was manic depressive because I never let him see that.
Right.
I only went there when I was weeping. One day I happened in there, and I was, woo, off the charts. And he said, I think I know what it is.
But this wasn't until you were 35,
35.
Right? So you had a lot of years of...
Oh, yes. Marriages, one masquerade party, wedding.
Thank you.
That was not a marriage. It only lasted 13 days.
Mm.
You know, I come from a very conservative family.
Patty,
I must have driven them insane.
I'm so into what you're saying, but I do have to remind people, and I'm usually good at this. You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program. We're talking with actress Patty Duke.
Thank you, bless her heart.
But her story is so compelling and has so much to teach us about forgiveness and mental illness as well, and being able to name it and claim it as
I'm
your therapist
you, when
did.
I'm telling you, doctor said, and, you know, it's so many years ago now, he said manic depressive. He didn't say bipolar. And that's, it just immediately clicked. That's how it feels.
Right.
Manic, yeah. Depressive. Boy, I knew that one.
Mm-hmm. Right, neither the very highs or the very lows.
Exactly.
It's a lesson for all of us. I just want to take you back a little bit before that. And now I want to go into Hollywood land a little bit and some of the incredible people and situations you were in. For example, when you won your Oscar, could you just take us to that kind of Hollywood? I spend so much time with the overpaid and overpraised now. I would like to know what it was like when there were people that you worked with. And
well, as soon as you said that night, it flashed, and the first face that flashed at me was Gregory Peck. Oh, my dear. Now, mind you, many years later, I would be his Screen Actors Guild president, and I would be in negotiations, and we were going to strike, and he would call me up on a payphone, and I mean, it was God talking
voice.
To me. I said, I have this film I want to start shooting. I can't shoot tomorrow. If you start, what do you think is going to happen? And I had no idea what was going to happen. I was in a room with nutty people ranting and raving. I told that man as if I was Solomon. No strike. Absolutely no strike. Then I had to go back and sell that to everybody else. Oh, I also... let me bring up a person who was, in death, controversial. Sharon Tate, who we worked in Valley of the Dolls together along with Barbara Parkins. Sharon was at least as beautiful inside as she was outside. The tragedy, as I saw it, prior to her horrible death, was she didn't know how gifted she was. And so she would sort of go along and, oh, okay, they're expecting the dumb blonde. I better give them the dumb blonde routine. And we used to have so much fun together, just silly girlfriend kind of fun. She taught me how to do my eyes like hers. Somehow that didn't help the rest of the situation. I don't know.
Well, that takes us to Valley of the Dolls.
Yes,
so
it
I
does.
Guess we'll jump over there real quick.
I'm sorry.
While we're on it. No, Valley of the Dolls has become such a cult phenomenon. I suppose you're aware of that. Is that the kind of thing everybody talks to you? Especially when you're here in San Francisco and you walk down, for instance, Castro Street. That would be somewhere that you're very popular, Valley of the Dolls. You think?
Yes, I have known for quite some time.
The gay community has embraced it.
Except once I was the Grand Marshal of the West Hollywood Gay Pride Parade, and my husband and I had just been married, and he was riding, because he was a military guy, he was riding up on the side of the car in his boucle sweater, and I, Screen Actors Guild president, was looking as dumpy as I could look. I had to wear a protective vest, and because there were death threats, you know. I'm sure they thought they were thinking of someone else. At any rate, we're riding down Santa Monica Boulevard, and I'm waving and waving, and he's got an eye just bead on me. And we get to the bleacher part where they have all the numbers that they put up for the floats, and all of a sudden, all tens went up. And I said, oh, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And they said, not you, him.
Right. Well, speaking of the gay community, the late Ross Hunter, who was a friend of mine, a producer, said
what
the
lovely man.
He was a lovely man, and he said the only woman who ever made him think of becoming heterosexual was someone you worked with, Susan Heywood.
Aha!
Yes.
Yeah.
In Valley of the Dolls.
Absolutely.
It was supposed to be Judy Garland.
It was supposed to be Judy Garland. Judy had been hired. I didn't like that idea, because I felt they were exploiting her, as usual. And unfortunately, she was having very tough times emotionally, and she was not able to cut it.
Did you rehearse with Judy?
I rehearsed with Judy.
Yeah.
I spent treasured time with Judy in her dressing room, trying to urge her and trying to reinforce for her that she does have support out there. The director was an absolute idiot. Wouldn't even pay her the courtesy of a good day. Anyway.
And she was on drugs, so you probably
drugs,
related.
Yeah, booze, you know.
Everything.
Yeah.
So you could relate to her.
I related to her instantly and completely, and not just as two stars, but as two kids who were dealt horrible hands. At any rate, when she was fired, I was, of course, devastated. Nonetheless, the little trooper here goes on.
Sparkle Patty.
Sparkle Patty, sparkle. at any rate, it wasn't known for a few days what was going to happen, and there was all kinds of rumors and buzzes, and of course, we were the talk of the town. Then it came down to us that Susan Heywood would be replacing Judy. I thought I had one treasure. at any rate, she came. It was a tough position to take. Mm-hmm. Replacing anyone, just as being replaced, mm-hmm. is a very difficult thing to do, especially Susan was crazy about Judy.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, she also was a trooper, and we set about rehearsing our scenes together. By the way, at that time, She didn't know, nor did any of us, that she would be dead within a couple of months from brain tumor. She was wonderful. You know that voice. I can't do it. I would love to be able to do it. It always had a little New York in it. Mm-hmm. You know, no matter what, Cleopatra, a little New York in it. she was gracious and friendly and nervous. And I was awestruck and nervous. One day we did that scene that has now become folklore, where I tear Helen Lawson, played by Susan, tear her wig off and throw it in the toilet. So we're rehearsing, and it's going fine. And she's a tough little, you know, we were both tough little scrappers. Came time to shoot it, and I don't think I've ever known what exactly happened, but as we were chasing each other, Susan fell. The mean director decided that I had done something to make her fall. Mm. Something that pained me and haunted me for years. I would never do such a thing to anybody, but I certainly wouldn't do it to Susan Hayward, who was well up in her years. At any rate, we did the scene. We did it to the best of our ability. But I don't know if he tainted her concept of me or not. I think she was probably smarter than that.
Oh, I'm sure. She probably thought the director was a jerk, too. I mean, she's been around.
That's right. Yes. If only we could tell that to each other.
Right, right. Oh, you're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program. We are talking with actress Patty Duke. So now we'll go a little bit back into meet Patty, Kathy, who's been just everywhere. Are you okay
Look
with this?
You.
Oh, please, we could all sing this together. Patty's only seen the sights a girl can see from Brooklyn
Follow
Heights.
The bouncing wig.
Yeah, oh, they're cousins,
you know,
identical
people
cousins.
People come up to me in airports, in supermarkets. Once, I swear to God, I was on a gurney. Am I lying? I was on a gurney in the hallway of the hospital, and one of the girls pushing the gurney said, "Me, Kathy, who's lived most everywhere."
Oh, man.
I said, "Okay. Okay, I've heard it all." But, you know, there was a time when I hated it because it was then symbolic to me of you can't do this and you can't do that and you're going to do this and you're going to do that. I now cherish the times that people come up to me and sing it in airports or anywhere else they want to sing it to me. Yeah. Even during a brain operation, what the heck?
Yeah, you have peace with it now.
I have peace with it. It has also been a tool, a wonderful tool to be... that helps me to communicate with people. You know? Mm-hmm. If more strangers could go up to a total stranger and say, "Me, Kathy, who's lived most everywhere," what a better world it would be.
Right, right. That's true. Well, you had quite the time with famous people, famous men, particularly off camera. I mean, well...
Close your ears, Michael.
Yeah, no, but I'm going to have to talk. John Astin has long been... I've been such a fan of this man.
Good.
He's such an unusual presence.
And, he's wild and eccentric.
Are you friends now?
We are. Oh, you know, good. We have children in common.
Yeah.
And it's the same with my husband's ex-wife.
Mm-hmm.
We have holidays and things together.
Sure.
The only time it feels weird is if you let it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So John is a professor now at Johns Hopkins University.
In drama?
No.
Literature?
In Baltimore, in drama.
Yeah,
I said no and I meant yes.
Oh, that's all right.
You gotta watch me. At any rate, he's a whole professor person and is loving it. Mm. As a matter of fact, one of our sons, Mackenzie, the next one down from Sean, is living there in Baltimore and assisting his dad in drama at Johns Hopkins. We can't say it enough. I do correct people who call it Johns Hopkins.
He's really something. He just killed
talented,
me.
Talented yeah. man, kind man. You know, I was not marriage material until God gave me the opportunity to marry my husband, Mike, 23 years ago. There was nothing wrong with the men that I married. I just wasn't, you know, I was wacky. And that wackiness can be can come in funny ways, but it also comes in vicious ways, and it comes in depressed ways, so that the men that I was married to never really got what turned out to be the real me. So I apologize to them.
But I've got a lot of questions here. A number of them are coming from the internet audience. So a number of them are about Wicked. So let's talk just a little bit about Wicked, and then we'll go back. Your career is so rich. Your life experience is so rich. It's got a couple different books you have written.
I have.
And that's quite amazing.
You know, what the books have done for me is what I intended them to do for me and others, and that is to shed some light on one person's experience with mental illness that has had a very positive recovery. I mean, that was the whole intention of doing the books, and from what I hear from people over the internet, it has been helpful in aiming them in a direction that works for them.
I love Call Me Anna because I like it so much because I grew up in show business. I grew up in the neighborhood you talk about and famous people, and I saw a lot of sadness, illness, sickness that was dressed up like Xanadu in Citizen Kane. Your book kind of tears the tinsel off of Tinseltown.
It does for my generation and for people who share my particular mental illness. You know, it isn't just show folk who have mental illnesses. There are plenty of them, but it's not just show folk. And for me, It's become very important to let people who are struggling with it see that someone is still functioning and better than functioning and enjoying, and that it is possible. Anyway, I don't know what when I got my diagnosis, I really thought very soon after my diagnosis, I gotta tell people. You know, I felt like, excuse me, but I felt like a scientist who could not withhold the information.
Yeah, right. Well, and you also explain what you take in order to control it. And you make
yes,
it very
I take
specific.
Medication. I often don't mention specifically what it is because then others run and think that's the one for them.
Right, no.
We're all different, and thank God there are all kinds of things available. Mm-hmm. Mine is lithium. Has been for 27 years. Mm-hmm. Thank God. No, none of the big side effects. Right. Occasionally I'll have a little tremor, but I just blame that on old age. And, and people buy it.
Right, right. Let's go to Wicked for just a moment. A lot of you who, in case you haven't seen it, it's playing right now in San Francisco at the Orpheum, and she is just terrific. Why don't you tell us who you play and a little bit about the experience.
Do not hesitate. Run to the Orpheum
People at
Theater.
The internet questions I'm getting, they just love it. They love you in it.
I'm having such a ball. It took me a while to kind of get it, meaning the music. As much as I would like to think I'm a great singer, I am not very musical at all. So it took a lot of experts a good deal of time to teach me certain things that didn't come naturally to me. But what did come naturally to me was delving in and exploring why that woman is the way she is And so I have my own little private monologue that I go to occasionally if I feel I'm losing focus. But I have to tell you something. To stand on a stage next to the two young women who play the witches, yeah, and be right there while they sing. I mean, it's beyond singing. I don't know what it is. It's an angelic chorus.
It's the story of the good witch and the bad witch of the Wizard of Oz and their background before Dorothy came to Oz.
How they got to be.
Yeah.
The Wicked Witch and right. Glinda the Good.
Right, right.
And I'm the, I play Marrable, Madame Marrable, excuse me. Mm-hmm. And I'm the head shiztress at Shiz University. I am also, in the end, the wickedest, 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 wickedest of all. And I love it.
You can tell you're having
I'm
a
I'm playing
ball.
This nice old lady all the way through, and then all of a sudden she turns into this menace. I have a ball. And anyway, you deserve to see and hear the talent that is on that mm-hmm. stage. Mm-hmm. And their special effects ain't bad either.
Yeah, really. And it's a great way to turn young people on to the magic
oh,
of live
little
theater.
Little ones
yeah, they love
have
it.
Come.
Yeah.
Oh, God, there was one the other day. She was 4. But she was supposed to be 5 to get in, but she was 4. And she said, "Are those your eyelashes?" And I said, "Yeah." "Can I touch them?" I mean, to think that a tiny little one right. could have had that 3-hour experience
right.
and still be interested in, "Are those your eyelashes?"
But what a wonderful thing to do at a time when kids are getting so much of their show business from the internet and from video, and to see the magic of live theater. So
oh,
important.
There's nothing like it. And I'm telling you, it's live. Sometimes I have a senior moment on stage. They already gave me the words.
Right.
And I can't make them come out. So what has evolved is that Marrable, gets the point across, but sometimes she talks in a very strange language.
You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio show, and we're talking with actress Patty Duke. Now, you are one of the only people who have been able to play two leading roles in the same story. You not only played Helen Keller, but you played Annie Sullivan.
What a thrill and a half. You know, when Melissa Gilbert's company called and invited me to play Annie Sullivan to Melissa's Helen Keller, it was the dream of a lifetime come true until it was time to do it. I struggled so. I did not want to do an imitation of Anne Bancroft. I wanted it to have its own signature. But I also didn't ever want Annie to feel betrayed that I thought I was good enough to step into her shoes. Mm. So I finally got up the courage enough and called her. And I hemmed and hawed and finally told her what was happening. And she said, "Oh, honey, that's wonderful. Oh, honey. I said, "Well, I'm a little scared that you," she said, "a what? Being better?" And there was, I learned, tremendous truth in that question. Sure, I wanted to be the best one, but not if it was at the cost of my relationship with Annie. I think we both found, after the fact, that Melissa Gilbert was a wonderful Helen, totally different from mine, but wonderfully valid, and she, too, is still a friend of mine. Mm. I just got an email from her. She sent me her itinerary. You know, she's doing Little House on the Prairie, the musical, and she's touring the country. 35 cities.
Wow.
I said, thank God she's only 42. I can't wait to go home and write one back to her. Are you out of your mind? Anyway, it's wonderful. Yes, we're both show folk, but what we have with each other has very little to do with show. It has much more to do with tell me how you feel, tell me how you feel. I've been blessed so many times with that. It really makes it worth going to work, I'll tell you.
But you know that you made this journey through child star to adult star, and that you came out the other side for whatever reason. We can thank God that you came out the other side.
Most definitely.
Yeah, I mean, the luck you talk about. But when you see other child stars or people who were forced into the business, for instance, Michael Jackson, do you feel something?
God bless him.
Yeah.
I do. I think that there is a camaraderie or a bond among those of us who started out in this business as children. And I ache for, I have for years, that Michael never understood his own worth. Why did he have to do all that stuff to his face? Well, people don't do stuff to their face unless they think there's something wrong with their face. There was nothing wrong with his face. Unfortunately, there seemed to be no one or no one at the necessary moments to give him, to help him find that backbone and that love of himself. And this is I know lots of child performers who are now grown-ups who are struggling, you know? All of a sudden, we're not so cute anymore. And we didn't do anything wrong, but what happened?
I see it worse now in Hollywood than before. I mean, I still go down for Directors Guild meetings, and I'm still active as I want.
You're
as
active
I
can everything.
Stand to be. Yeah, down there, though, it's hard. Because you see a lot of people now with no talent and no background and no commitment to the craft making it big.
Well, I think that one of the things that my generation of actors, where we were lacking, was in passing along to the next generation the importance of discipline, the importance of responsibility. I mean, you know, when I was a kid, I learned, even from the Rosses, that I have to respect my boss, or I at least have to respect my boss's position. And there are a number of young girls out there that when every time something comes on the news about them, I just want to screech. I want to screech, here's my phone number. Call me up, because honest to God, there really is something worth working for.
What would you tell them? You tell them, learn the craft, right?
If we're going to talk about the actual work, yeah, I would talk to them about professionalism. Mm. Professionalism means you make a deal with somebody and you're going to live up to it. Now, don't make the deal if you don't want the deal. But once you've made it, that's it. And you show up on time. You show up sober. You show up not hungover. You show up with all of the tools that this party has bought. And you use them. And I swear to God, you're happier for it.
Oh, absolutely. And I interview some of those girls who have never seen a Bette Davis movie. Or they don't know who Billy Wilder was.
How sad.
Yeah, it's like insane that you wouldn't know who the icons were of your own craft and study them.
Yeah, well, as you and I know, and most of you know, the almighty dollar is where it's at, and nobody cares who is producing that dollar. Mm-hmm. They just want it. Nobody cares that that person doesn't feel well today. Mm-hmm. Nobody cares that that person is lost. Mm-hmm. Make the money and get out of here.
Well, speaking of that, there was this giant movie about returning bad jewelry called Lord of the Rings. And you have a son that actually became quite the star.
Go figure.
That. Yeah. What do you tell? I mean, are you concerned about Sean? Or
Not anymore. Yeah. Certainly not about his career, but the way he doesn't call often enough, maybe.
Aha! A mother.
Now,
yes.
I'm going to get in trouble for that because he just left me a message.
Right.
You know, my kids were... They were taught by example more than anything else that the things that I talked about earlier, the responsibility to a job.
Right.
And that, you know, okay, so you may be a humongous celebrity, but you still have to find food to eat, clothes to wear, and usually people are serving you that. Well, you better treat that service and the person who's doing it with high regard. And my boys, I must say, they know that and they do that.
Well, yeah, they...
And I got to give them credit for it. You know, I wasn't always over there with a stick saying, do this, do that.
No, but they didn't really see you in the bottom of your disease.
Yes, they did.
They did see you.
Oh, my God,
drunk,
yes,
hungover, irresponsible, crazy.
Yes, yes. My two oldest sons lived through the height of my disease at its worst. They were the ones banging on the door when they were 5 and 7 years old, saying, Mommy, Mommy, don't take anything. Mommy, Mommy, come out of the bathroom. Mommy, Mommy, don't take anything. These kids have been there, which in an ass-backwards way, maybe what happens to us when we see some kind of tragedy like that and we escape it, we're going to make sure that it doesn't repeat itself.
Got some audience questions here, and you are listening to the Commonwealth Club radio program. We're talking with actress Patty Duke. Here it says you've had these big experiences, childhood, teenage years, a mature woman. Where is your happiest time? Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty obvious to all of us.
Sitting on the end of
that
row.
There he is, right there, baby. very non-showbiz guy.
That's true, except... Mm-hmm. That he's become awfully good at separating the wheat from the chaff.
Mm-hmm.
We have a partnership. It's a little mom and pop thing we do. Actually, it's a nana pop thing we do. I have been blessed, and the ultimate blessing is one day God said, oh, I'd like you to meet this gentleman, this drill sergeant guy. I mean, I was making a movie, and he was assigned to be my drill sergeant to show me what it was like to go through basic training.
What movie was that?
That was called A Time to Triumph, and I was playing a real lady who was a helicopter pilot, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, he drilled me, as they say.
Oh. Whoa, is that ever a... What a line!
Oh, my God. He's shaking his head. He's shaking his head. Did I do bad? I'm sorry.
Moving right along, Patty.
Right.
Yes.
But it was. He was drilling me in how to be a combat person.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been together some 23 and a half years ever since. When I got back to Los Angeles, I had a session with my psychiatrist. And I kind of hemmed and hawed about, you know, how was the filming and how were things? And then finally I said, I met someone. He said, who? A guy. No kidding. You met him while you were filming? Yeah. What does he do for a living? He works for the government. Quickly, I stopped playing the game with the doctor and said, he's a drill sergeant in the U.S. Army, and we think we're going to get married. My psychiatrist said, have you been taking your medicine? I had, and I do.
Uh-huh.
And I wound up with with someone who cares for me the way he would want his children to be cared for.
Oh. Oh, it's great. Just great.
He's also learned that drill sergeants can weep.
Ah, yes. I have a military man myself.
Ooh. And, what'd you get, Navy?
I got a Navy,
yay!
Only his idea of a romantic film is Patton. And, Patty, I get so tired of wearing that uniform, you know?
Touché.
They're different. They're a different breed. But it's you know, for someone that was born, raised, and bled show business, I can see the attraction of a military man there.
That military man, certainly.
Yeah, yeah. So non-show, kind of a non-show. You know, it's not about...
Yeah, he calls it the way it is.
Right, right.
Except about me, I get all the praise.
Well, let's go to another question here.
Sure.
This one's from the internet. Who are some of the most exciting movie stars you met growing up? I think we mentioned Gregory Peck.
I told you about Gregory Peck. There was Cary Grant.
Oh, this is nice.
He came into my tiny, tiny dressing room when I was playing Helen Keller, and he was so grand and gracious and kind and warm, and I never wanted him to go away. Richard Burton.
Oh, that voice. Oh, that way he spoke.
I worked with Richard Burton when I was a child. Oh. He played Heathcliff, the grown-up, and I played Kathy, the child.
Wuthering Heights.
I had such a crush on him. I used to just follow him around.
And he was nice to you.
He was lovely to me.
Yeah.
But
He did. We should say for the radio audience, Patty just made a gesture as if she's drinking a bottle.
Right. You know,
it
Richard
him,
drank
actually.
A lot.
Yeah.
It has killed so many people who deserved to have full, happy lives. Again, it is a drug, in my opinion, that rarely does us good. But we do use it to cover.
What people don't realize about alcoholism is the hardest people to get sober are the very wealthy, are the very famous, because they have people around them who are invested in them not getting sober, and they never have to hit bottom. They never have to hit bottom.
Hear, hear. Oh, that was a very wise thing to say.
Oh, oh, I said something wise. Oh. Okay, we'll go to another question
that
then.
And
while
the
I'm
Navy
on top
guy.
Here. And the Navy guy. Okay, I got two. When you had the TV show, did people come up to you and want your autograph and make you crazy, basically, is the question.
People come up to me all the time and want an autograph. And if it makes me crazy, I'm crazy happy. Yep, it is the same as someone shaking your hand or reaching out to you. If it's just to write my name, I want to have that connection with that person for that second in time.
Right. So you have an attitude of gratitude.
You
about
got it.
The public.
Yes, most definitely.
You know, a lot of stars don't today.
I feel so bad for them.
Earlier stars did.
There are people today who won't sign autographs or won't meet the people who have come to see their show. I feel sad for them. They will never know how many wonderful moments they've missed.
Yeah, it's true. Also, here's a question. It's in your book, so I think it's from the internet. But your book talks about this. What was your relationship with Lucille Ball? It's from the internet.
Yes. It's as if the internet is like the Oz head.
In Wicked. Well, it kind of is.
My relationship with Lucille Ball was sadly truncated. The first time I met Lucy, I was a kid, and she just made such a fuss over me and my talent. And, of course, I was just flabbergasted that she knew I existed. We didn't go to dinner every day or things like that, but we had a very nice relationship. Then I started to date her son, Desi Jr. And I now understand more than completely why she was worried. I was older than Desi. I had been married and divorced. And she took that motherly stance that we can take when we're afraid of something. She was never mean to me, ever. The tabloids, of course, would have liked you to believe that. Not true. We wound up, before she died, really exchanging love and respect for each other. And I never felt that was a relationship that never got finished. We did. We did good.
Yeah, because she was a tough cookie. She was...
Sure, she's a tough cookie. I'm a tough cookie, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
That's, you know, Virginia Mayo once told me that you have to have
Virginia
the height...
Virginia Mayo, yeah. I love her.
I did too. And she said that you had to have the height of an elephant to be an actress.
You know...
Because the vulnerability cannot be there.
It is something that I'm seeing now at this age. And after sort of slowing down my career for a while... I'm very thin-skinned now. Michael, of course, helps protect me as much as he can. But I'm even
Go
thin.
Go Patton.
Yeah. I'm even thin-skinned sometimes in my own head. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to lose what I've gained in terms of finding my love for people and my appreciation. But I do need to toughen up a little, you know. Just because somebody says something not nice to me doesn't mean that I have to succumb to that.
I know one of your favorite movies we haven't mentioned was Billy.
Yes,
this is a movie that was filmed
Billy.
At Uni High School where I went to school.
That's right.
And we always talked about it at Uni, that you filmed Billy there.
One is of that, the fellows mm-hmm. in your gymnastic department mm-hmm. did the pole vaulting.
In the
me.
Movie.
And the poor kid, he was 16, and he had to wear the shorts, and he had to wear stockings to make his legs look tan, and the bra, and the wig. And now somebody says, okay, give me an 8-foot pole vault. The guy gave his life for that movie.
He was your double.
Can you imagine what he went through? I can't. Wherever he is, I bless him.
We only have a few minutes left here with Patty Duke. And Patty, you know, what do you want people to know? What do you want them to go away with about your journey and about the great movies? Like, what would you like them to rent to know your work, perhaps? And then also,
was that a lovely invitation?
Thank you so much. This one is critiquing me here. So what would you like them to rent? And also, what would you like them to go away with?
Okay, I'd like certainly Miracle Worker. Right off the bat, and if you can do it, The Next Generation Miracle Worker with Melissa Gilbert. I had a film that I loved in the 70s that I don't think four people saw. It's called Me, Natalie. Mm. And I just thought I did really good work in that. And it was during the height of one of my manic episodes. What I'd like people to go away with knowing about me is that to be part of the march against mental illness, for mental health, is what our lives are mostly about now, Pop and me. I would love... And somebody's going to teach me how to do this one of these days. I know it. If I say it enough, I would love to see a march on Washington of mentally ill people.
Well, we already have them in Washington.
Ah, nuts! I'll set them up. You knock them over. Oh, I did not see that coming. You're
but I know
a devil.
You want to see a march where people make a statement and some legislation.
Just some visibility so that some people will talk, maybe on TV or somewhere else, about the possibilities of mental health. We hear mental illness, we don't hear people like me talk about their mental health.
Mm-hmm. And that there's hope. That hope, total
oh my,
hope.
There's more than hope.
Yeah, you look at, you've come
the
out
scientists the other, have well. Done unbelievable work.
And you are a walking example of it with a wonderful vitality and positive thinking and love.
Thank
we can
you.
All learn from her. Our thanks to
Bless
Patty
you.
Duke.
Bless you, darling. Thank you.
We also thank our... You can now see Patty in Wicked. Don't forget Wicked. We thank our audience here and on radio, television, and the internet. I'm Jan Wall, and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating more than a century of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.